the purpose of practice is to convince yourself that you're really good at that particular skill. And I think a lot of people approach practice with that I am broken in a particular area and I need to fix myself. So when it goes to practicing your mentality, I think that that is huge when it comes to what you should be practicing, how much time you should be practicing on something. I do not think you should practice any more than 10 minutes on a particular skill.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rippin'.
All right, Justin, welcome to the biggest podcast in the golf podcast game right now, apparently, is what you're telling me.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a big deal. I mean, Member Guest is growing, and it's all over Instagram, and it's very much an icon in the golf business right now, which I'm loving.
Well, now I for sure need to get a booth at the PGA show next. So did you go this year by any chance?
I did.
Does everybody go to that thing before we start this? Does everybody go?
I go every 2 years. So okay. So I'm a golf coach by trade, and they have a thing called the PGA Teaching and Coaching Summit every 2 years. So I go every 2 years, and it's just a great place to network, kind of rub elbows with other people in the business, learn new ideas, and kind of just refresh on the stuff that you're doing. Because as a golf coach, a lot of times, we're, kind of saying the same thing sometimes, and it's good to kind of refresh your information and refresh kind of what we're talking about. So, but it is a big deal. If you've never been to it, it's a humongous convention center. Every golf business and every golf tech training aid is there. A lot of people in the business are there. So it's a great thing to go to if you haven't gone to it yet.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll just schedule my next time I go, when you're going to be there. So before we talk about how I found you and vice versa, would love for you to give kind of your background to the audience before we get into how to make less bogeys and play better golf.
Absolutely. Yeah. So my name is Justin Klumbala. I've been in the golf teaching world since 2008. So I kind of graduated from a PGM school, kind of getting into the golf business. And I found out in the summer of 2007, when I was kind of running the outside operations, that I wanted to be a coach. That's what I really wanted to be. So I kind of officially became a coach the summer of 2008, worked for some great top 100 golf coaches, one being Michael Hebron and the other one being Jim McLean, who had the most influence in me at the early part of my career. I was with McLean for 6 years, was kind of a head coach for his golf schools, and then was also the director of instruction of one of his schools in Arizona. After that, I got picked up by a private club called Paradise Valley Country Club, and I've been there for 10 years now as the director of instruction. So I've been coaching for a long time now. And so I'm coming up on, I think, 17 years that I've been coaching, and it's my passion. I love it. I mean, I would just love helping people get better at golf and constantly learning myself, right? So everyone's on their own golf journey to get better. I'm on my own golf coaching journey to consistently try to learn more new things that I can bring to my students and help them play better golf.
Yeah, and I found your stuff just through, I don't know, like you said, just kind of on Instagram and social media, and kind of like we were talking about before we started. I'm on my journey to try to get to like a +3 handicap, and I think a lot of people who listen to us appreciate the tips and tricks on how to get better at the game. And for me, it all comes down to bogey avoidance. You can only make so many birdies in a round. Every now and again, you might have a chip in or something that goes your way. But generally speaking, it's about, avoiding the big numbers and about bogey avoidance. It's like when you're talking with your students and a lot of the content you put out on Instagram, what are the main things that you see people do incorrectly, or maybe kind of the basic stuff that you don't see people do enough of when it comes to kind of like, breaking 80 or breaking 90 or just shooting low scores in general.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't really think their way through a golf course. So, I mean, I think you're spot on when it comes to bogey avoidance is a humongous key, you know, to playing better golf. And what a lot of times what happens is that people don't really think about how to attack a golf course a little bit more strategically. And one of the things that I found was, is that there's usually six really easy golf courses, easy holes out on the golf course. There's six medium holes, so like kind of hard. And then there's six usually pretty hard holes out on the golf course. And what's interesting is if you look at the tour, so the best players in the world, on average, they're hitting 12 greens in regulation on average, roughly speaking. So about 12 greens in regulation, which means that on average, they're missing six greens in regulation. And they're missing the greens in regulation. So we could be a little bit more strategic in actually choosing which greens we're actually going to miss in regulation, maybe on purpose. Because a lot of times, how are tour players missing six greens in regulation, but still shooting under par? Well, it's because when they miss the greens, they're able to get it up and down. So kind of finding those hard holes on the course that you're going to play and being like, you know what, this is going to be one of my holes that I'm actually going to miss in regulation. And where do I want to miss? Where's the great place to miss it in regulation? So we're going to be off the green in regulation. It will be an easier up and down where I can save that par. That's what great players are able to do. They have that short game that's able to get them up and down. But part of the way that you can kind of stack the odds in your favor that you're going to get it up and down is actually missing it in an easier spot by not short-sighting yourself, not forcing yourself to go over a bunker, not short-sighted, you know, putting yourself in a position where it's a more difficult up and down. So I think strategically missing some greens is a strategy that I don't think a lot of people are applying. And I think it could really help people shoot lower scores. And as you said, avoid the bogey instead of going for harder greens in regulation and then end up short-sighting yourself and putting yourself in a position where it's difficult to get the up and down.
Well, I never thought of, I mean, it's a weird concept to think, I'm for sure going to miss this green, right? Like, I don't think you ever want to tell yourself, or at least I would want to tell myself, oh yeah, I'm going to miss six greens today. I'm just going to make sure I'm going to miss them in the right spot. How do you mentally tell people, you know, there's obviously, you're not trying to miss a green on purpose, or maybe obviously sometimes you are if you're in like a recovery situation, but is it more about the targets that you're choosing based on pin locations, or, you know, how are you having that conversation with people about, yeah, here's the reality. You're not going to hit every green, right? And you can try and forecast which greens you may not hit. But are you literally talking about a concept where we're going to miss a green on purpose, or is it more just picking the right targets so that you're in good positions if you hit an errant shot and you're not short-sighted in a bunker, you know, something like that?
No, I think your second point is a little bit more of what I'm talking about. Like, we want to kind of avoid that short-sightedness. So basically, if the pin's tucked right, you know, we're gonna go to the middle of the green. And then if we pull it a little bit left, I would much rather you miss the green a little bit left of the green than you go for that flag and then end up being short-sighted on the right side where it's a much more difficult up and down. And then, yes, if it is okay for you to actually strategically say, you know what, this might be a hole that I'm going. I think knowing that it's okay to miss a green and even strategically missing the green sometimes actually, I think, alleviates the stress that you're going to have when you're playing out on the golf course. So sometimes missing a green on purpose is okay as long as you're putting yourself in a position where it's an easier up and down. And I've actually had people do this strategy before where I actually have had people, and it's a good thing for your listeners to try as well, because it's a good short game practice as well, is to play a round of golf. Maybe it's just a recreational round, but it's a great exercise. And you have to miss every green in regulation. So actually, you have to miss every single green in regulation. You cannot hit a green in regulation. You have to miss every green in regulation, but you have to miss it more strategically. And then at the same time, you're practicing your up and down game. So if your short game's good enough, and what we've seen on the tour is they're kind of above 75% when it comes to up and down percentages. You know, they're above 75% for two reasons. One, they miss in smarter areas. And then also they have the skills to be able to get the ball up and down. So I think it would be a great exercise for you to try, and then also all of your listeners to try. Go play one recreational round. You're not allowed to hit one green in regulation and see what you shoot. If your short game is amazing, you should only be a few over par. Go ahead and try it and see what happens. And then it starts making you think a little bit more strategically out on the course. Okay, I can't hit this green in regulation. Where am I going to put the ball so that I have a better chance of getting it up and down and saving that par? And then at the same time, it's kind of giving you this idea that I have this whole extra shot to get on the green. I don't have to get it on in regulation. I can get it on the green in regulation plus one. And then where do I want that plus one shot to be coming in from? And it just forces you to start thinking different when playing. And it's a great short game drill because now you have to get it up and down 18 times throughout your round.
Yeah, we talked just before this. We kind of asked it a little background on, like, you know, why we started the pod and all this stuff, and we gave you a little bit of overview. And one of the things I'm trying to focus on this off season is short game. And when I say short game, you know, to me that means, you know, non-full swing wedges, so, you know, basically 90 and under, and obviously chipping, but it's really everything that's, like, you know, 90 yards and under, flighted wedges, those kind of in between 40, 50, 60 yard shots. And I'm curious your thoughts on, I saw one of your clips where you're kind of talking about, like, practicing, and it was an analogy between, like, $1 million today or a penny that doubles every single day, something along those lines. And I'm curious for your players, when you talk to them about the right ways to practice and how to actually get the most out of that practice. Because transparently for me, and I think for a lot of players in general, you know, you might go and practice, right? But and even if you have something like Decade or something where you're tracking your stats or tracking your game, you go and practice, but, like, are you practicing the right things? And two, is it actually translating to better scores? Or are you just practicing it because you think you're bad at it? How do you have people structure practice so that you're actually getting something out of it, right? Like, that's such the hard thing about this sport, where you can practice putting for an hour a day, six footers, for like a week straight. Then you go out on the course and on your first hole, you miss a six footer, right? Because it has 3 feet of break or whatever. But, you know, you get the gist. Like, I'm curious how you have people practice and then how ultimately you get, you know, the right stuff out of your practice. And how do we know if what we're practicing is actually making material impact out there?
Yeah, so there's a lot I can talk about on this particular subject. So, I mean, practice, I think, first off, I want to talk about is that people don't measure their practice. So they're kind of practicing not randomly. They're practicing really without a purpose. So basically, they go and just practice short putts for a very, very long time. But there's no, like, real task at hand. So one of the drills that I have a lot of people do if they just wanted to work on their short putting is I have them kind of put five tees around a circle at 3 feet, and they have to make 10 in a row. So it means that they have to go around twice. If they can make 10 in a row, they get to move that circle to a 4 foot circle. If they can make 10 in a row there, they get to move that to a 5 foot circle, and we just keep moving the tees back to make it a bigger and bigger circle. Now, what's great about that is that it adds measurability to it. So every single time I have people come out and work on short putting, for instance, they have to start at 3 feet and see how efficiently they grow their circle each time. And then every time that they go and practice it, I want them to write down, keep a little journal of how far they were able to get that day. So let's just say that day they started at 3 feet, they got 10 in a row, then they went to 4 feet and they got maybe 10 in a row again. Then they got to 5 feet, and the farthest they could go is 4 in a row from 5 feet. So they would write down in their journal for short putting, 4 in a row from 5 feet. Now, what that does is it kind of now adds a benchmark that they're trying to beat every single time that they come out and practice that again. And then what the thing is about making 10 in a row is that it adds pressure to your practice. And why we want pressure in our practice is because when we go out and play out on the golf course, there's pressure. And those, when you're trying to get 10 in a row, putts 1, 2, and 3 are a lot easier than 8, 9, and 10. Because if you miss 8 or 9, you have to go back to 0 and you have to start all over again, right? So we're working on 10 in a row in order to advance. So measurability allows you to track that particular skill to see if you're actually getting better over time. And then also it adds pressure to your practice. So that way, when you are going out to the golf course, because what a lot of people do is they don't measure anything. There's no pressure into their practice. So when they go out to the golf course, now there's all of a sudden pressure. So when the pressure's present, it's like, oh my God, now I got to make this putt. And there's a lot, it's just a different environment. So if you're adding measurability to your practice, you can track it over time to see if you're getting better at it. And then also you're applying yourself to this pressure that you're going to actually eventually have to face out on the golf course. And then the other thing what you had mentioned too, it's about how much time you should be practicing on something. I do not think you should practice any more than 10 minutes on a particular skill. No more than 10 minutes on a particular skill. It's too long if you're doing it for too long. So what I do is, and actually I've even sometimes cut it in half, and I've even done it called it the 5 minute drill. So basically I'll set up kind of five different stations. Let's say I have a short putting skill that people are working on, a long putting skill they're working on, maybe a bunker skill, maybe a full swing skill, and maybe, you know, a chipping skill. So I'll have five different stations, but I'll set my timer for 5 minutes. You work on that particular skill for 5 minutes. Once the timer goes off, you got to go to the next station, no matter how far you've gone. Now, let's say we're doing that short putting drill and you're at 3 feet and you've gotten to seven in a row. And that's and then all of a sudden the timer goes off at seven in a row. You kind of push pause. Okay, I'm at seven in a row for short putting. Now I go to my long putting drill. I start that for 5 minutes. Okay, 5 minutes are up. I push pause on however far I've gone in that particular game. Then I go to bunkers for 5 minutes. Then I go to full swing for 5 minutes. Then I go to chipping for 5 minutes. And then I'm back to short putting again for 5 minutes. So basically, if I have five stations going, that's 25 minutes of practice I've done so far. And now I'm back to short putting again. If I go through all five stations again, I've now done 10 minutes of each of the stations. And I've now practiced for 50 minutes. And then if you did one more go around, you'd be about an hour and 20 minutes that you've now practiced. So you're close to about 90 minutes of practice that you've done, but you've done 15 minutes of each of these particular skills, but they're broken up. And what's great about them being broken up is it keeps you much more engaged in your practice. So we want to keep that engagement high when you're practicing. And if you do something for too long, that's the same thing. You just start to lose interest in what you're doing. You start to miss a lot more. And you're not missing more because you're a bad putter. You're missing more just because you're bored. You've been doing it for so long. So 5 minutes of something, move on. 5 minutes of something, move on. 5 minutes of something, move on. And then after 90 minutes, you've technically done 15 minutes of each of this skill, but in 5 minute little increments. And that has been a game changer. And I've had people do that. They have enjoyed their practice more. They've gotten more out of the practice. It's all measurable and there's pressure. So it's just a much more efficient way to spend your time than just going out there and putting for one hour, 60 minutes on one subject. It's just really hard to do.
I think you just answered what was going to be my follow-up question, but I'm still going to ask it anyways. Block practice versus randomized practice. How do you decide what to do? And if you had to choose one, which one would you suggest players do, right? For example, block practice would be like hitting 100 six-footers in a row on the same line. You're working on your setup, right? As opposed to, you know, kind of what you're saying, which is, six-footers, but in all different locations around the holes, right? Or around the holes so that you're getting different kind of breaks. Or even maybe like grabbing it, go into a hole location, putting it down at 6 feet, different hole location, put it down at 6 feet. I'm always curious the differences between like block and randomized practice and you know, what people suggest.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely been coached into the idea and I've heard the study that random practice is better. But if you didn't notice in the 5 minute thing, it's like, it's almost kind of like it's a mixture of both, right? So we're blocking in 5 minutes and we're focusing in on one skill. But there is a little bit of randomness to it because we're going around the hole instead of doing the one hole over and over and over and over and over again. So I do more like the idea of random versus block just because it kind of, I've been calling it more improvisational skills. So improvisational means like if you're now set with a particular challenge that you have to get the ball to go do something and you only get one try to do it, we need to be able to have that improvisational skill to be able to have a challenge coasted to us and then be able to do it in one try, as opposed to being able to make 100 six-footers in a row, you know, from the same spot over and over again. I think it develops a dependency that you're going to do something over and over and over and over again, and then be able to translate that to the golf course. So I think the idea of the going around in the circle kind of has a mixture of both. You're still blocking, meaning you're doing the same particular skill for a long period of time, but it is from different angles into the hole. So it's kind of a mixture of block and random. But in general, I do like random more than block.
So then for my last question on like the practice stuff is, I'll give you an example. When I was, it was probably 3-4 years ago, starting to get to the point that like I was trying to consistently break 80, right? Like I had this thought in my mind that like if I can drive the ball in the fairway, it's going to lead to lower scores. Like I need to drive the ball in the fairway. And I think I became really good at driving the ball, but what I lacked was a short game and kind of all the other aspects of my game, right? And so when I talk to people nowadays, they always ask, you know, like, where should I focus? What should I do? And of course, everything is player dependent, right? Like if you're Pat Geeter and you're looking at your chart, your little web, and it's showing that you gain 3.5 strokes or 4 strokes on the field every week with your driver, but like you're losing a bunch with putting, he's probably going to work on putting a lot more, right? And chipping a lot more in his short game. But for like the average player, when you're talking about reducing strokes and playing better golf, how are you splitting up the categories of practice and what do people need to focus on? And I'll kind of give you the 5 categories in my opinion. It's driving, it's iron play, which would be like full swings. It's chipping and pitching, it's putting. And then I throw in mental game in there because I truly believe course management and kind of the mental side of golf will save you a lot more strokes than just, you know, being really good inside of 3 feet with putting. How would you suggest people structure this? Because there's a lot of people that'll tell you, get really good at driving the ball, the rest will figure itself out. And there's other people that'll tell you, if you can figure out how to chip and putt, everything else is going to get better. So I'm curious on your take for people that are trying to structure practice and structure how they're going to get better. How would you suggest people do it?
I think it's important to note that the purpose of practice is to convince yourself that you're really good at that particular skill. And I think a lot of people approach practice with that I am broken in a particular area and I need to fix myself. So when it goes to practicing your mentality, I think that that is huge when it comes to what you should be practicing. You're practicing to convince yourself that you're great at the particular skill. You're not practicing to try to identify why you're broken. And that's where a lot of people go and say, okay, I can realize that I can't get my driver in play. That's my problem. When I look at my course stats and everything like that, I can't get my driver in play. And I've seen people go to the range and they spend hours on their driver trying to fix themselves because they can't get their driver in play. And they're just grinding and grinding and grinding away. And a lot of times with that mentality of trying to fix themselves because they can't hit the ball in play, that 60 minutes of grinding, of hitting driver for 60 minutes, by the way, it sounds exhausting. But if you were to go do that, it basically, you know, you're just digging yourself sometimes into a bigger and bigger hole because you're just further and further proving to yourself that you're broken on that. Because if you think you're broken, you put all your focus in on when you hit a drive that's not in play. So when you're in practice, the ball goes way to the right. It's not in play. It's like, see, that's what I always do. So what I would prefer them to do is that when you go to practice, when you do hit a drive, and everyone does, eventually hit the ball down the middle and perfectly in play, we need to be like, wow, look how amazing I am at hitting that drive in play. What did I do there to hit the ball in play that made that so amazing? So I think that's one thing about practice is we have to more focus in on why am I so great at this particular skill? And what am I doing when I do it correctly? Versus when it goes off to the right, what am I doing wrong? So our goal in practice is to convince ourselves that we're great at it. To answer your other part of your question is those 5 things that I think you had mentioned, I think all 5 should always be practiced every single time. So I think if people design their practice similar to what I kind of said earlier, the 5-minute drill where you kind of set up 5 different stations, you should be doing those 5 stations even if you are struggling most in driving. I think like driving should be a point of focus, but we should also be continually trying to get the rest of our game also great as well. We don't want to just zero in and just focus in on problems, because I think I heard this on a podcast that was trying to get somebody ready for another sport that they basically focused in so much on this person's weakness. Now, this is an Olympian trying to get better. I can't remember the sport, and it wasn't golf, but they were trying to get this Olympian ready for the Olympics. And they said, yeah, here's your problem. Your problem is whatever. And they ended up putting so much focus in on to the weakness in their game that this Olympian, who obviously was extremely great at this particular, you know, sport, ended up depleting their confidence in that, like, man, maybe I'm not very good anymore, because they were zeroing in on the one skill that they weren't very good at. So like spending so much time on the weakness can sometimes actually make you a worse golfer, because you're basically just zeroing in on like, wow, I'm really horrible at this thing. And then all of a sudden you actually get worse. So I think keeping that variety in your practice keeps you engaged. It also allows you to sharpen the parts of your game that's already sharp. Let's keep getting those sharper and sharper. And then when you do go to the thing that seems like the weakness, when you do eventually hit that shot that's great, figure out what you're doing right when it's so great versus zeroing in so much on when it goes wrong and being like, man, why am I so horrible at this?
Yeah, I've never thought about that before. I think a lot of people, you know, people always hone in on their strengths. And then, you know, they find a weakness and they just hammer it. And then all of a sudden, to your point, they don't think that they're good anymore, when in reality, like, they're good at four different things, but might just be struggling in one area, and you start to lose confidence. And that's when like the whole thing breaks down, right? Then it all kind of comes crashing down. I want to know, what do like the, I think you said you've worked with like college players before and other like, you know, elite golfers. Aside from the time that I think obviously people who play the sport for a living or are playing it, you know, for a scholarship or, you know, at school or whatever level they're at, aside from the time, what sets aside the elite amateurs, the college kids, the pros from, you know, maybe the rest of us kind of mere mortals who were, you know, trying to get better, maybe have a barrier away? Is it, you know, aside from the obvious being highly skilled, you know, what are the differences that you see? I'm always really interested in hearing what the elites do in the game of golf, because it spans quite drastically.
Yeah, I think at the high elite level, I think competitiveness just has, you know, they're just highly, highly, highly competitive. Like they'll just put more time into something than anybody else will to achieve what they want to do. But just to highlight a little bit on these college players that I've had the opportunity to work with, I think sometimes they get stuck too much in that world of, because I help a little bit with the NAU, Northern Arizona University Girls Golf Team. And a lot of them sometimes get stuck in this, like, too much in their swing mechanics, you know, and they get stuck being like, you know, where's my swing at the top of my swing? Am I transitioning right? What do I look like at impact? And I'll give you an example of something that I did with them at their last practice that I worked with them. They were, you know, I had a couple of girls that were coming in and they were just really concerned about their swing not being perfectly on plane. They wanted to know their numbers on TrackMan. And I was up in Flagstaff helping them. And there was this tree in the middle of the range that was just in the middle of the range. And I had them change their focus so much on like where their swing was on plane to saying like, hey, do you think you could hit that ball and actually hit the tree and have it hit the tree so hard that it actually like crocks the tree and it makes a sound, you know, that echoes throughout the range, and like everyone's going to turn and see who's hit that tree. And all of a sudden, when I changed their focus from like, how on plane is my swing like robotically perfect, so can I get the ball to hit the tree? And I even told them like, I wanted to draw into the tree and I wanted to get the right side of the trunk where it hits the trunk and makes this sound. And then all of a sudden, and I kept the TrackMan on. And then all of a sudden, when I when when I I had them more focusing on that. Their swing was much more on plane. Their TrackMan numbers were much more zeroed out because I have them more focusing on what we call the extra. Can I get the ball doing what I want it to do? Versus, is my internal swing and mechanics perfectly on plane to achieve the zero to zero path and zero face to hit the tree? We get so focused in sometimes on trying to get everything perfect. But at the end of the day, the scorecard only cares if you can get the ball to do what you want it to do at the end of the day. And a lot of times when we put our focus in on trying to just get the ball to do what we want it to do, the internal kind of takes care of itself. I've kind of told this story a little bit. I have a 10-month-old daughter at home, and I've kind of watched her learn how to eat and feed herself. And right now we have like some food on her plate. And all she's thinking about is trying to take the fork, hit the broccoli, and bring the broccoli to the mouth. That's all she's thinking about. Fork, broccoli, mouth. That's all she's thinking about. Now, if you think about that, that's all external thinking. She's thinking about the fork, which is not about her body parts. She's getting the fork to touch the broccoli. The broccoli's not her body parts. And she's putting it into her mouth, right? If I wanted to be the best teacher in the world and teaching babies on how to properly eat, and they were cognitively smart enough to understand what I'm about to say, I might want to get clever enough to teach them how to do it this way, where basically, well, actually, if you look at this, watch Daddy and how he eats. He gets his right shoulder a little in front of his left. His arm extends out. He internally rotates his shoulder. His elbow points towards the sky, and then the fork touches the broccoli perfectly. Well, everything I just said is correct. That's all correct information. And the next time that you or any of your listeners go to eat a piece of broccoli, I bet you your right shoulder gets in front of your left. I bet you extend your arm. I bet you internally rotate your shoulder, and your elbow points towards the sky when you go to click the, you know, hit the broccoli. But none of us ever think about that. We don't think about that step when we're going to deer, right? We just think fork, hit broccoli, broccoli, bring to mouth. Same thing that we need to be thinking about in practice. And I honestly think that that's what the elite players think about. Where do I need to put this ball? And I'm going to go put the ball exactly where I need to do it. I'm not going to think about where does my swing plane have to be? Where do my hands need to be in relationship to the club? Where should my right hip pocket be? All that stuff we're thinking about all the time. I honestly don't think the elite players think about that. I think I'm going to put ball into hole, and that's what they did, you know? So keeping the focus on the external, hit the tree on your driving range, if there is a tree on your driving range, you know, if people have targets out there that you can kind of try to hit, I think that's so much better. And keeping your brain in that, and all of the practice drills I have my students work on, it's all focusing on external. Can they get the ball to do what they want to do? I don't care how they do it. They can put their elbow in any different direction. They can put the glove anywhere they want to. If we can get the ball to do what we want it to do, that at the end of the day is all we're trying to do. And that's what the elites do. They get the ball to do what they want it to do. And if we keep our focus there, I think the internal figures itself out.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that because I think the biggest, one thing I've noticed over the past year, you know, whenever PGA Tour, Korn Ferry, you know, stuff gets put out, they'll give them like a whiteboard and it's like, what are your swing thoughts? Right. And like, all the elite guys, like, no swing thoughts. I don't have a swing thought. And like when I talk to a lot of my friends that are playing professionally, and I'll ask them kind of what they're thinking in their swing and stuff, and a lot of them will say, like, on the range, when I'm practicing, when I'm doing stuff, very technical, got thoughts, I've got feels. But what you have to do is kind of disassociate when you get on the course. On the course, you're playing golf. You're not playing, like, how pretty is my swing or what is my feel, like. Like you said, you got to get to the ball into the hole. And if all you're doing is thinking about different swing feels and thoughts and routines, now your mind is away from, you know, the ultimate goal, which is getting this ball in this hole. And that, as we all know, that's already hard enough. So to add more stuff to it just makes it more complex. And so on that topic, like, as we're kind of wrapping up, I don't want to take too much of your time, but I do want to know, you know, aside from being you know, on the practice range and getting your feels, getting your thoughts, doing all this stuff. Once we actually apply that, right? Like, we apply it to our actual game. We want to go out there. We want to shoot better scores. Do you have any tips for, you know, myself and others as to, like, call it like process and kind of feelings on the golf course, or, you know, what people are generally thinking about? I mean, I would like to think that, you know, a lot of these pros we watch, they seem very relaxed and very like into their round. And I'm curious how to harness more of that, right? Like, how do you get into that? Everybody searches for their flow state, right? Like, how do you get into that flow state where, you know, everything is working really, really well? And how do you stay in that longer into like a 5-hour round of golf, right? Like, what are some suggestions for how to get into that kind of flow state of mind?
I think that flow state of mind tends to be a little bit more when it comes to just being in the present as much as possible, you know, like really just focusing in on what am I trying to do on this particular shot? You know, if I can stay at just trying to make this particular shot that I'm currently trying to hit as great as I possibly can, that's going to keep you kind of in the flow state. I think a lot of times people are thinking about things that they can't control. And the number one thing we cannot control that we think a lot about during our round of golf is our score. I think a lot of people are thinking about score way too much. Not only on the macro level of like, you know, what am I going to shoot today or what did I shoot on the front nine, but also like on the micro level of like, what is this shot for? You know, a lot of times people make a lot more putts for par than putts for birdie because they know it's a putt for birdie and they know it's a putt for par. Sometimes people, it's like a putt for par. Oh, I got to make this. So they make it a little bit more, but then it's a putt for birdie. It's a very offensive thing to make a birdie. A lot of times they miss that, right? But it's because they know it's for birdie. The ball doesn't know it's for birdie. The putter doesn't know it's for birdie. The hole doesn't know it's for birdie. It's just a putt. And one of my favorite things that I've heard from Scottie Scheffler, and he's one of my favorite examples of a golfer that I think just prove a lot of the things that I believe in the game of golf, is that on Saturday of the Masters, he was in the media room, and somebody asked him in the media room, they said, hey, what do you think you have to shoot on Sunday tomorrow to put on a second green jacket? This was a year ago in April when he won the Masters for a second time. What do you got to shoot tomorrow to win it, win the Masters? And his answer was flawless. His answer was, I have no idea what I have to shoot tomorrow. I'm just going to try to go out there and hit great shots. And I think people that are in the flow state are A, just thinking about the current shot that they're currently hitting, and they're trying to make it as great as they possibly can. So they're trying to make it as great as they possibly can. Most people are trying to hit shots that are not in the flow state. They're trying to avoid trouble. Like they're trying to avoid bad swings is what they're really trying to do. I think you can manage conservatively, but then execute aggressively. So I'm not saying go for every flag, and I don't think Scotty's going for every flag, but he's out there trying to hit as many great shots as he possibly can. So when you have a putt, whether it's for birdie, par, or even triple bogey, because if you turn a really, really bad hole and you save and turn a quadruple bogey into a triple bogey, neither of those are very good scores, but a triple bogey is better than a quadruple bogey, and you're still saving a stroke, even if it's just for a triple bogey, right? So we still want to make that putt, no matter what it's for, whether it's for birdie or for triple bogey. Making the putt is going to help your score either way, right? So we need to stay in that positive mindset that I'm here to hit great shots, no matter what the score is for. And I always find myself even giving myself a personal challenge that if I can somehow be in the middle of my round and I have no idea what I'm shooting that day, and I maybe not even know which hole I'm on, is always a big goal for me. I want to be so much in the present that I don't even know how many holes I have left in the round. I am just literally playing one shot at a time and just trying to make that shot as great as I possibly can. And I don't care what hole I'm on. I don't care what I'm shooting that day. And I'm just trying to stay in the present as much as possible. And just at the end of a hole, write the score down and then put it away. You can add it up later. You have all the time in the world at the scorer's table to add it up and make sure it adds up correctly. But in the moment that you're out on the golf course, your job stays. The ball, that's pretty.
Yeah, that's something that I've struggled with and I'm trying to get better at. We'll focus on going into next year because, you know, all the rounds that I've played good rounds, most of the time I didn't even know where I was at. And it's really hard to comprehend that, honestly. Like when you talk to good players, I'm like, yeah, it's actually a good thing you don't know where you're at. It doesn't click until it clicks one day and you go, oh, I see what they mean now. Like that makes sense to me. I finally understand it. The hard part is actually doing it, like anything within the game. But I appreciate your time. Appreciate all the tips. I love the content that you're putting out. We were talking a little bit before this. It sounds like you're going to start to really focus on putting more out there. I don't think the golf world, I don't think there's enough golf content out there that people won't take in. If it's about how to get better at this game that is just so frustrating, but so perfect in so many ways. If it's, you know, how to just strategize better, if it's whatever it may be, keep putting content out there. I'll be down in Arizona this year a few times because I'm getting married down there. So maybe I'll have to come and see you. But aside from that, where can people find your stuff? I think you have a YouTube and Instagram. Like, where can everybody find you and find your stuff?
Yeah, YouTube and Instagram are the two channels I post the most on. So, and I've posted a lot on both of those. So I'm going to be ramping up the content this summer on both of those channels. So that's where you guys can find me. But I've been posting on both of those channels for a little over 6 years. So there's plenty of content out there for you to kind of follow what I've my style of coaching. So if you're looking to follow me along, you know, follow me on those two channels and you'll find great stuff.
Yeah, I love it, man. I appreciate your time so much. It definitely won't be the last. I'll give you a holler next time I come down to Arizona and keep on doing what you're doing. I'm sure we'll stay in touch and hopefully get to do something in person soon.
Yes, please contact me when you're coming to Arizona. I would love to meet up with you and I'd love to maybe even share a round of golf with you too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my favorite thing to do, so I'll be sure to make time for it. I appreciate you. Have a good rest of your day. Thank you for joining us on the what I now know to be is probably the biggest, greatest podcast in the world, the Member Guest Podcast. So I appreciate it.
Biggest golf podcast in the world. I love it.
Thank you, Justin.